What's going on, everyone? It's me, Lone. Welcome to episode 6 of Lone Vault Radio, the video games podcast where I invite my friends, other content creators, and industry colleagues to talk all things games. In episode 6, we have another very special guest. You're all very special guests. He is a fellow YouTuber and content creator going by the name of JV. JV, what's going on, brother? Thank you for joining me, man.
Hey, Lone. Dude, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you. It's so cool to like see you launch your own solo podcast. I feel like you've been talking about this for so long.
So
like you want to do this.
You and I, and this is kind of breaking the fourth wall, but JB and I, we have so many chats about just YouTube and life and like what to do with our channels dating back years. Like I remember like an E3 time years and years and years ago where we were talking about what we wanted to do with our channels and the direction that we wanted to go. You're killing it, bro, by the way. Can I just say you're absolutely smashing it with what you're doing.
Thank you so much, man. Yeah, I feel like that's the constant state of content creation, right? Is like talking about how you're doing it, what your plans are, how things are going. But yeah, man, thank you so much. I feel like I'm going through another one of those transition periods where I'm trying to figure out like where we're going with this thing, what's working, what's not working. But so happy to be on here with you.
I would love to talk to you about that as well. And obviously the big focus for today is Assassin's Creed Shadows. The game, I think, technically launched today, but obviously people have been playing it and reviewing it for a little bit now. One of those include JV. And JV, I want to get all your thoughts because I haven't played it yet. I want to know, is the game good? You know, does it live up kind of like to the Assassin's Creed legacy? Is it the next best step for Ubisoft, et cetera, et cetera? But as always, at the start of these podcasts, I want to talk about you. And just how you're going. How is your channel? You mentioned there that you might be going through a bit of a transition period. So let's deep dive into that. How's everything going with your YouTube channel at the moment?
Yeah, man. So I would describe it as going. I feel like the last 2 to 3 years I've been doing like a very specific format, and I've actually found like the most success I've ever had. It's been crazy, and it's variety, which is hard. Like, as you know.
Very.
Yeah, been on the platform. Yeah, as long as I have, it's just like so difficult to be able to, you know, cover what you want to cover and to be able to mix things up and not just deliver the same game or the same format every single time. So I feel like I like hit on something, but then slowly over time, it feels like the wheels kind of fell off. Like I stopped enjoying it. My audience, maybe the algorithm fell off, like something has changed. And it's taken me a while to sort of realize, like, if I'm not enjoying it, then this thing's not going to work, like just full stop. I've been like kind of taking a step back. I recorded a video last month where I was on green screen, just like talking to the camera. Yep. Yeah, which is not something that I'm comfortable doing or that I have experience doing, but I just like went out there and did it and was like really happy with the reception. And so it's something I want to like, transition into and start doing more on the channel.
So why do you think you've reached this point where you're not sure if you're enjoying this, you've taken a step back, you're trying out different content? Like, why do you think that is? Are you getting burnt out? Because, man, you, and we were talking about it off camera before started recording, you have to play so many games, right? And they're longer and longer and longer, like, you know, 40, 50 plus hours into Assassin's Creed Shadows. And even that is on the shorter side. Like, there are some games that I'm sure you've put 100 plus hours into during an embargo period trying to get that video out. Is it the grind? Is it the burnout? What do you think it is?
I think for me, a mix of both for sure. I mean, just you and I have been doing video games on YouTube for so long. And so it's weird to be like, this will be 15 years later this year that my channel's 15. Existed.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
15. Damn. That's a long time, bro.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like I've been at this, you know, in this mode of I have to make a video, which like I totally get complete privilege, obviously very grateful to even, you know, call this a career.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's it gets to a point where the lines blur, I think, between why am I doing this? Like, is this fun or is this just what I do? And so why did I hit this point? I think it is definitely a mix of burnout and grind and not really connecting like the purpose of what I'm doing to what I'm like putting out there. And so this, I know this all sounds kind of ephemeral, but it's something I've had to like reflect on and figure out like what's going on.
Yeah, I know we're getting a bit existential with the conversation, but I think it is important because the brief window that I personally tried doing YouTube full-time, man, I burnt myself out so bloody quickly, and there was other external stuff happening at the time. But you've been doing, and how long have you been doing a full-time for? Like, it's not been the full 15 years, or has it?
So I started in high school, so I don't know if you could call that full-time.
Sure.
But yeah, I dove head in, so, and I have not come back up since then. So 15 years.
So you've like pretty much from the moment that you started straight out of high school, I don't know if you've had any other side jobs, you just went straight into doing YouTube full time. That is like, that's insane, man. That's actually, usually people will like work their way up to it, or they'll be doing YouTube as a hobby on the side or whatever it might be. But you've been doing this for pretty much full time for 15 years.
I have. Yeah, man, I have. Wow. And like, yeah, I luckily got a break, found some success. And it's the only job I've ever had. I've not had a side job. So it is literally, this has been it for me. So, yeah.
So going back to the point, like we are getting a bit existential, but do you see yourself doing this kind of forever? It's a question that I don't always like asking YouTubers because like it makes them ponder and think about the future. But since we're on the kind of discussion now, do you see this being a thing for you forever in some capacity? Is there any other jobs or careers that you would want to try since you haven't had the opportunity to do since, you know, high school? What do you reckon, man?
I think this is it, honestly. Yeah. And it's sort of like, and again, I know it's awesome that we get to do this and create content, but like, it's sort of a for better or worse thing for me. It's like, I don't see myself doing anything else. Anytime I do try to imagine that, it's hard to imagine. So, and obviously if I did, like if this YouTube thing doesn't ultimately work out, you know, for whatever reason, I get burnt out or the algorithm changes or the content moves along and I don't change, you know, I've always thought, you know, maybe some sort of community management role in the games industry perhaps, but like the games industry, it, as you know, as we've witnessed, is like volatile. And so, that is like scary to me.
I'll be honest with you, man. Like any job is like there are few jobs that aren't volatile. Like if you work in health services, for instance, like my wife does, like she will pretty much have a job for life as a midwife so long as she wants to, right? There are certain industries and careers where you can pretty much say you're going to have a job forever or you'll be able to earn income through that. But then there are other industries, and it's not just games, but I was working at a company in media before I joined my current job in the games industry, and I was made redundant, right? Like you part of your line of thinking is, well, I'm going to get a normal job, a full-time job, and I'll be safe there. But even then, you don't know. So like that same argument applies to YouTube too. And ultimately, you really should just be wanting to do the thing that actually gives you enjoyment day to day. And it sounds like even though you've been going through a bit of a tough patch or a tough time, YouTube is still very much that for you.
Totally. It is. Yeah. Ultimately it is. It's I live and breathe this job. Feel like you have to, if you're really going to do this thing. So
for sure.
That's it, man.
So what does the future hold then? Like you have experimented with that green screen content. Obviously, like you know what your formula is right now with the kind of content and the games that you cover and the content that you produce. But do you want to keep going down that route of experimenting? Do you have any kind of like big ideas that you want to try and tackle? What do you reckon?
Yeah, man. I want to keep experimenting. I see this last couple of years as being kind of sort of stuck in a mold, in a format. And for me, I think it's definitely time to change. And so big plans are, more green screen stuff, talking to the camera, sort of like putting me first instead of game first. And that's like a weird sort of thing to flip around. But I've been enjoying it so far.
All right, man. I'm looking forward to seeing what you do, genuinely. Produce more of that content because, like,
thanks, dude.
I think you present the camera well. I think it'll do well. And I like the idea of ultimately it is JV. Like, that is your personal channel. You should do what you want with it, Murray.
I know.
Live your life. if you're not enjoying this, what are you doing it for?
No, totally. Yeah. I always say, like, I'm my own boss and I hate my boss. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just need to, you know, just let loose a little more.
I agree. But ultimately as well, I would still like to see you produce some of the videos that you do, because, like, even with your Assassin's Creed Shadows videos, you've come up with such a great concept that has performed really well for you. You're getting sponsors as well. Like, you've kind of ticked all those boxes when it comes to creating a sustainable, you know, YouTube channel. So I'm really keen to see what you do. But touching on Assassin's Creed Shadows, man, I just want to throw a ton of questions at you. I haven't been able to play it. I do have a code, and thank you to Ubisoft for sending that across on my PS5. And I really want to dive into it. What is it like? I don't want to preface this by saying anything in particular or leading the conversation. You've played 40 to 50 hours, perhaps a little bit more. Just tell me straight up, what did you think of Assassin's Creed Shadows?
I will say I think it is a good game, mm-hmm. not a great game.
Okay, tell me.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like, where to begin? AC is such a complicated franchise.
It is, right? Yeah.
You know, I like to say your preference on these games depends on when you started playing them. So,
you know, each game.
First one, man.
Yeah, hell yeah. The OG.
Since the beginning. OG. Yeah, I like to flash. I don't think I have it close. Actually, I do. Hold on one second.
Go. Do you have like a collector's edition or something? Oh, legit. No way. That's sick, dude.
Yeah, I've got like swag from 2007 right here.
Damn. Like, so you and I both, like, we were there for the original, which let's be real, hasn't aged the best, but it was the first shot at the franchise, and then it got really good with the Ezio trilogy.
Yeah, man.
So you were saying you've started with the OG, but it depends where you start, right?
It depends where you start. And I think people who started with Origins, Odyssey, Valhalla will like Shadows no matter what, because that's the framework, the format of this game. It is that open world RPG.
Yep.
However, if you know your roots were laid down before that, I think that for a while now you've been searching for, you know, when are they going to go back? When are they going to focus more on stealth? When are they going to do these old school things?
Yep.
And Shadows does do some of that. And I found some of that stuff to be really satisfying, like the stealth with Naoe. The detection, the mostly one-hit assassinations, like stuff like that's very important to AC fans. And so I found that stuff satisfying.
Okay, all right. But it sounds like you've said it's not a great game.
Yeah.
Why is that? Like, if the stealth sounds like it's good, there's the satisfying stuff there. And obviously, they started that, going back to that a little bit with Mirage. I don't know if you did play Mirage, but Mirage was essentially like, I don't know whether you would call it a reboot, but it was more like back to basics. This is what Assassin's Creed was known for, especially during the early days. Let's go a bit back to that. So it sounds like there's that there, but why is it not a great game?
For me, it is, it's the format. It is like how big it is. It is how it is trying to be an epic where it throws like 40 different characters at you, and you'll get, you know, like 30 hours into the game and they'll reference someone back whenever. And you're like, I saw that guy on screen for 5 minutes. Like, who are we talking about? I think it is like, it's too big for its own good. Which is funny because that's what the criticism for Valhalla was.
I was going to say, okay, this is, I can have a big discussion with you about Valhalla. Is it more like Valhalla?
So it is, but so Valhalla was this big. Shadows is this big. It's like almost half as big in terms of content. Okay. So you hear that and you're thinking, great. That's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah.
But when you went like at the end or nearing the end of my Shadows experience, I'm already kind of feeling a bit of a weariness to it. I think it doesn't hit great in terms of the quality of the game because that same Ubisoft open world feeling.
Their format. Yeah.
Yeah, their format. That they are so similar to me not being able to break out of my YouTube format. They are stuck in their format, man. And it's, I think it's to the detriment of the quality of the game. I think it puts butts in seats. You know what I mean? People will buy the game, but it's not knocking anyone's socks off.
No, and it's, I've had a lot of time to think about this because I don't think what we are saying as gamers is that, oh, you know, I hate long games because long games don't have enough time. If the game is good and it's long, great, right? Like you could be sitting there and playing it for hundreds of hours and you don't feel that weariness, right? But at least, and I haven't played Shadows, but I did play Valhalla. I very much felt that weariness. I felt like, God, it's taking me to every possible spot on this map. I've got to do every single little thing just to finish the main story. And I got to that point. Don't get me wrong. I actually liked Valhalla. I liked the Vikings, the theme and everything. Like it was very much up my alley in that regard. But I did feel that weariness. Can you come up, like, how do you explain it? Like, why is it? Is it because Ubisoft is doing what they keep doing and you're just tired of that same formula? Like, what is the point where you reach in this game where you're like, I'm not enjoying this like other long games? What do you reckon it is?
I think it's a couple things. I think it's how they don't really try to hide what they're doing. There's no sort of cloak and dagger about it. I think that you can list all of the things that a Ubisoft game does, and then you can go to a Rockstar game, and you can be like, they're doing the same thing. They're doing some very similar things going on, but I think Rockstar disguises those things better. I think that just the way they contextualize what you're doing. I actually watched SkillUp's review of Shadows, and he had a great point about how every single location you visit in Shadows, in order to complete the location, you hold one button to turn on X-ray vision. You find what you're looking for, and then you beeline it to go do that thing. And so you're not actually like absorbing the level. You're not soaking in the environment. You're not thinking about it. So I think that Ubisoft's approach to open worlds are so, it's so repetitive and very, it's not trying to disguise what's going on. I think there needs to be more in between what they want you to do and what you're doing, if that makes sense.
It kind of sounds, and again, I felt this with Valhalla, you reach the location, you have the same checkbox of things that you need to tick off, and then you move on to the next, and to the next, and to the next. Like, I remember playing Valhalla, like, where I wanted to collect everything and make sure I completely cleared out an area before moving on to the next. But that became so repetitive so quickly that I stopped doing that, and that's when I actually enjoyed the game more, when I was not trying to complete absolutely everything. Is Shadows kind of like that as well?
I think you can make the experience worse for yourself for sure, and I have consciously not done what you described. Every time I enter a camp, I actually just like go for what the objective is. Which is kind of antithetical to what I just mentioned, but I don't want to overwhelm myself because there are so many camps. The map is, while it is smaller than Valhalla, it's still really big. To the point that you all these places, they start to blend together. But it's beautiful. I don't know if you've seen enough gameplay to recognize that for yourself.
It looks like gorgeous.
Yeah, like they were really cooking with the lighting systems and whatever tech they underlined stuff that they improved from Valhalla. Like it's a gorgeous game, but it's sort of a shame that you don't really remember any specific locations because you're just boom, boom, you're pinballing between places.
That's a really good way of explaining it. Yeah. So you mentioned, so visuals are something that you like. You like the stealthy gameplay, especially with Naoe. Is there anything, because I know we've been a little bit negative at the moment, or constructive at least, but is there anything that you really liked about the game that, like, actually, you know, this is cool, and that's what at least makes it a good game in your eyes?
I would go for stealth, I would say.
Okay.
Just Naoe's general playstyle. That protagonist, her combat as well is very fun. It's very acrobatic and stylish. I would extend the same thing to the parkour, which, like, purists of Assassin's Creed will tell you, man, this is not good enough. But I try to find a compromise with that. And for me, she's so fast. I like her little flips. Like, I know when I press a button that she's going to do a cool flip, and that is satisfying to me.
Yeah.
And so I think some of the core stuff that, like, these things I'm talking about, is you're like, yeah, that's Assassin's Creed. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I think that stuff speaks to people, a certain person who was looking for that out of these games.
Okay, and it's very funny that we have not talked about the other person you can play as, Yasuke. Why is that, JB? Is there a reason? Did you play as him or not?
Barely. And that is purely because of his kit, because of the way he works compared to
He's not really an assassin. He's like a brute, essentially.
He's a brute. He is, I like to say, he is the character that if you started with Odyssey or Valhalla, he's the one that caters to that audience.
Interesting. Is he at least fun to play as? It's one thing to say, like, you know, he's just not like the Assassin's Creed games that I like. He's not stealthy or whatever, but he's still fun. Is he fun to play as if you're going for that kind of style of gameplay?
He's fun in the way that if you like stylish executions and chopping dudes' heads off and ramming through doors and doing the loud sort of stuff, I think he is fun in that way.
Okay.
However, you take him to a fight, compare that fight to Naoe, it's like easy mode. It's like you flipped a switch, like you turned on a cheat, and it's just like, wow, the game is so much easier because he hits harder than her and he can take way more hits than she can.
So what happened? Like, I, at some point in development, I thought this was more meant to be like a 50-50 Yasuke Naoe. You can pretty much play him at the same time. And it feels like they've changed that drastically. And I know, like, there's been a lot of controversy probably associated with that. But did something change to the stage where you're playing Yasuke much later and he's not as integral to the story? Or am I just making that up?
You know, I don't know if something changed over the course of development. I will say that the way the story is framed, they try to give each character their time, but it's way more, it's like a 60-40 split, I would say, of time paid between those two characters. It starts with Naoe, and I think it's sort of, not to spoil, but it sort of ends with Naoe in a way.
Sure.
So it's weird, man. Yeah, there's a portion of the game, again, not trying to spoil, where you can't play as him. And then you get to a certain point, and then he comes back in. And that was a bit odd to me.
It just feels like they should have stuck with Naoe. If I'm being completely honest, like, focus on making playing as her very, very, very good. I know why they, like, they're doing it, and they kind of had it with Valhalla, where you can play as a male and a female, right? But they're both Ivor. With this one, two completely different characters, two completely different types of play style. I thought, well, maybe, like, if you can start playing them both at the same time, it's encouraging multiple playthroughs. Once your playthroughs mostly is Naoe, and the other time that you play mostly is Yasuke. But now it feels like Yasuke is like the character you bring in when you want to have some different battles, but he's still not like the main bit of the story. Like, it's really Naoe's story. Is that true?
I think so. Okay. Yes, I think so. So I got the chance to visit Ubisoft Quebec in January and play early. And yeah, I got to interview the creative director, the game director, and one of the narrative people. And so I asked some similar questions, like, what is your intent with the dual protagonist system? Like, what's going on here? Because this is the same studio that also made Syndicate, which was of like the closest comparison we really have.
Sure.
And so for them, they're like, we want to make two very distinct characters. And on one hand, in terms of gameplay,
yeah,
and in terms of story, obviously. But on one hand, I'm like, they kind of did that. They kind of did that. These are distinct. They do really handle differently, completely different weapon sets, move sets. But Yasuke is the one who feels restrictive, where Naoe feels like she's got a lot more going. Like, you can fully explore levels with Naoe, you can't with Yasuke. And so I just don't think they gave us enough. Yeah. Yeah. Like, he can't climb things she can climb. You'll go up to a viewpoint, which is a classic Assassin's Creed thing.
Of course.
He cannot climb those tenshus, those castles, and get the
viewpoint. When you're playing as him, you can't climb viewpoints. Like, and that's, is there a fog of war? Is that the only way to clear the map?
No. So, but it's also something you want to do. Like, you see it, and you're like, I want to climb
it. I want to climb it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's bizarre. So the game is almost like stop, pause, switch to Naoe. It's weird.
That it? I don't know how I feel. I feel like I just need to play and see how that runs. But I'm getting this feeling that I'm going to want to play mostly as Naoe, because that's the classic Assassin's Creed. She's a bit more acrobatic, a bit more flips, but it feels like I'd be more in line with that, because I actually really appreciated what they did with Mirage, going back to the basics of what made us fall in love with the franchise. At the end of the day, it's about assassins being cool and stealthy. Like, that's what we want to do. Can I ask you, 81 on OpenCritic, 81% very positive on Steam. Do you feel that's a fair score?
I do. I think when I was playing it, getting up to a certain point. So my video, I made sure to say it's not a review because I haven't finished it yet. More of an impressions, but like that's a chunk of time.
Impressions.
Yeah, right? I know. I'm like, guys, I'm not, some things could change in the back half of this game. You never know. But yeah, no, I'm like, that is so much time. Like, I know. So I was predicting like between an 80 and an 84, and it landed in the lower end of that, 81.
Sure.
I think that's a completely fair score. I think that's right around where it belongs. And that's pretty much, for me, that's good, not great.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I know that a lot was riding on this game for Ubisoft. Like, they've had well-documented issues, and we don't need to dwell on them, but finances, share prices, potential buyout, all going private with Tencent, yada, yada, yada. And a lot of people have been saying, like, Ubisoft really needs to deliver with Shadows and take their next step. Do you feel like they've done that with this game?
So I have a weird take about that. And
sure.
It's something that I planted my flag before it came out.
Mm.
And that's that I almost think, and this, I've been wrong, or Assassin's Creed has failed before. I almost think that Assassin's Creed in its current form is a bit too big to fail. I think it's just put out a competent game that is not buggy, and it's set in Japan, which is so hard to screw up. Like, it is just difficult to screw up an Assassin's Creed game in Japan. I don't think that some of the choices that I may not like, they are not deal breakers. This is still like a fun game. I'm still enjoying myself 50 or so hours in. So I don't think that it really matters. I mean, they've already posted first 24 hours. They sold 1 million copies. Great. That's great. Great start. But I don't know, man. I think the fact that this game got over the finish line and wasn't a buggy mess and didn't have the more obvious negative press that it could have had is a win.
I was going to ask you, because we didn't talk about performance or bugs. Like, did the game, or does the game actually run well? I'm assuming you played it on PC. What's the experience like there?
It's really good.
All right.
It's fantastic. Yeah, it is. Hell, like, if you play, did you play Star Wars Outlaws?
A little bit of it, but honestly, that was only 10 hours or so.
Okay. So if you thought that game was a bit janky or buggy, this game is a clear improvement on the bug quality, on how does it feel on release. This is a complete game in that respect. And then on my rig, obviously I have a great rig for what I do.
Sure.
Runs amazingly.
Yeah. All right. That's putting me at ease a little bit, because obviously, yeah, they had those issues with Outlaws, and it was just with everything else going on with this game, with the controversies and the negative discussions, that's the one thing they didn't need, because people would jump on that and latch onto that. So it sounds like it's performing really well in terms of sales. It hit 1 million players, as you mentioned. I think it was top of the Steam sales as well. I think you're right. It almost is too big to fail, but do you think we've been talking about an Assassin's Creed game in feudal Japan forever, bro? Like, probably even yeah. since the first game, but really it kicked off with Assassin's Creed 2 and Brotherhood and Revelations. Like, after the Italian setting, and there were obviously other places as well, everyone was like, feudal Japan. And then they did the round, they freaking did a world tour and kept skipping Japan. And at some stage, we all thought, are they actually ever going to do Japan? Finally, they've done it. Do you think they lived up to those long expectations that we all had about an AC game in feudal Japan?
Gosh, I think it depends. It's a hard one. Yeah, it depends on who you ask and what they're looking for. So I feel like I'm very pragmatic. Like I'm living in reality right now, and in reality, this is what AC is. I think it did live up to the current reality that we're in now. I can obviously...
That's a very politician's answer there, Jamie.
No, dude, I know. That's me. That's me. In alternate reality,
yes,
where these games are still action, stealth action, they take place in one city, and like the Assassin Brotherhood is very present, and you see people in hoods constantly, and it's, you know, in that reality... No, this didn't live up to those expectations, but that's not the reality we're in. So ultimately, Valhalla was a weird journey for me, because I had a very strong honeymoon phase at the beginning. I was like, this is amazing. Right. And then I put the hours in, and then it wore me down, and the cracks formed, and I reflected, and I was like, 200 hours in, like, it's hard for me to boot up that game again. And so,
yeah,
is that going to happen for Shadows? I don't think so. I think it's making more of an effort for an old school fan like me.
The thing that interests me the most right now is that we are seeing a lot of devs, they're feeling the strain with these big AAA games, budgets blowing out, really expensive open world RPGs. And we've seen, especially with Obsidian, that just did this with Avowed, they've created much smaller, not like small, but in AAA scale, a little bit smaller, more tighter experiences. They did that with Outer Worlds as well. And there's many other examples of developers doing this nowadays, probably because it's much more maintainable and approachable to make a game like that nowadays, given costs and everything. And I thought maybe Ubisoft could be going down that route with what they did with Mirage. Now, Mirage is a bit different because, from memory, it started off as a DLC, right? And they're like, oh, well, it doesn't make sense as a DLC, but we might as well finish this thing, right? So I know that that was a little bit different. Right. But I thought maybe they could be going down the Obsidian route, where they're like, no, we're going to make something a little bit smaller and more tight-knit and allow us to turn around games a little bit quicker. Do you feel like that's still on the horizon for them? Should they be doing more games like that to ensure their games aren't too bloated and we're experiencing the fatigue that we are?
I think, well, they have, I'm glad you said this, because they do have one project that's been in the pipeline for a while and has been announced for a while. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Hexy, Assassin's Creed Hexy.
Oh, that's like the witchcrafty one, right?
It's the witchcrafty one. And that's headed by the... narrative director, which, if you're an AC nerd like me, you know his name. I got to interview him because he wrote Valhalla. It is a smaller game. And so
I didn't know that. I thought that was the next big game, man. Okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a smaller, more contained thing. And so I'm fascinated to see if they can still deliver in that smaller, more contained. I mean, you did mention Mirage. Again, strong honeymoon feelings when it first came out. Upon reflection, I cooled on it. And I was just like, I didn't really connect with that character. The the narrative, I felt, that's another thing that I don't love about Shadows, by the way, is the target system. It's very disconnected because it's like, we want you to be able to do this in any order that you want to do it.
Oh, but God, you, damn it.
Yeah, you lose something, right? You lose a through line, like a narrative connection, an arc. So, so for me, like, what are they going to do with Hexy? Are they still going to stick to this target board system? I really hope not. I hope it is more like the older games, but we'll see.
It's such an interesting thing that you bring up, because I've seen, and even as a left field example, but the recent Pokemon game, I believe, did this, where you can go through in any order and do the game whatever way you want. And I get the thing on paper, like, it's open world, big RPG, we're empowering you with choice, da-da-da-da-da. And we haven't even talked about the whole canon system, and I want to touch on that in a second. But oftentimes, I don't find that it works, where it lets you kill these main people and do it in any order. To me, I'm like, what's the appeal of that? Like, what's the appeal of me just being able to choose where I go? Because I don't know much about these areas or the people that I'm going to or whatever. Like, it's a coin flip decision. Why do that as opposed to, no, we're going to give you a more, like, we're going to lead you down more of a path, but we can build more of a narrative in that regard? Because when you don't do that, and this happened in Valhalla, they kind of have to create this whole standalone story in the new area that you go in. And there's no connection, because there can't be, because they know some players are going to take it in a million different directions. So it's hard to have those narrative threads. Why are they doing this? I don't know that you would set me off with that, but I agree. Like, I don't get it anymore.
I don't get it either. I think it's certainly less satisfying. Like, it's got to suck for the people who work on the stories too, because they tell them you have to build up something compelling that players are going to finish within 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
And there's going to be almost no thread between, like, how is that?
Well, there can't
possible?
Be a thread, because people can do it in any order. So they can't have stories and stuff that happen in one reflect on the other, because that's just impossible.
I think Ubisoft, and they also mentioned this with the choice between Naoe and Yasuke and how players are going to divide their time. Their whole approach to both of these sides is player first. What does the player want to do? And so it's like, I get it. That's a very, you know, player friendly, you know, you do what you want to do, man. Like, that sort of thing, which is fine. But you certainly lose something with that choice. And I feel like we've seen game after game after game of them doing this. Star Wars Outlaws did that too. I don't know if you noticed that in the 10 hours.
I didn't
hours
get far enough in that game to realize,
Gotcha. So it's a strange choice, and I don't think it really works.
But you can still have player first mentality and choice in a more guided down the path story and game, right? Like, you can, because you can have branching paths, or just like people say different stuff to you or whatever it might be. It doesn't have to be this thing of like, you can go to area into any area in any way that you want to complete this kind of main story. Like, this is not like Fallout New Vegas or whatever, where like there are side quests and there are main quests and there are faction quests. That's not the style of game, but it's trying to be that in some way. I don't get it, bro. I don't get it. Just give me, and this is kind of why, like, I loved Assassin's Creed 2 and those original games so much, because it was telling this compelling and continuous narrative story throughout. And that's what I want to see. I don't want to see piecemeal fragmented stuff that's loosely tied together. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I do. And it also reminds me of Ubisoft's unwillingness to create a sequel. They won't do sequels anymore for Assassin's Creed games.
You're right! They aren't!
Like,
what's going on?
What's going on? And then they want to pass it to a different team every time. So they juggle it back and forth. And those teams have different ideas of what they want Assassin's Creed to be. And so it's and I'm so with you, man, on like the Desmond stuff and that arc. Like, like Revelations hits hard, man. Like,
all right, well, we're going to talk some spoilers, by the way, if you haven't played those original Assassin's Creed 2 games. Drop the ball, bro. What they had this awesome character. And obviously, like, there's a big discussion here about Assassin's Creed and them creating compelling protagonists, because many would feel, including myself, they haven't hit the same heights as they had with Ezio. Ezio was the gold star. He was freaking awesome. And at some stage, naturally, that story had to end. But they had Desmond, and yet they decide to freaking kill him off. And I know that he came back a little bit spoilers, I already said it. He's kind of there in Valhalla at the end, and I don't know how, if he's at all brought back in Shadows. But why did they do that? Oh, makes me sad, man.
It makes me sad too. Like he was sort of the glue, and
yeah, and
it was the I had this video which actually just makes me reflect back. I did talk to a camera for a video forever ago about how much I miss the old Assassin's Creed games, but I sort of figured that it was the relationship between the modern day and the Animus story and how yeah. those sort of intertwined, and what you did in the Animus affected the modern day. It was so cool. And it was like this sci-fi element that was just baked into the DNA of the franchise. It really gets on my nerves in the new games, how it's like they dance around it. They don't want to dip their toes too far into modern day. The Animus is there, but it's like for the old heads, you know, who, you know, it's not a big deal. It doesn't really matter that much.
Can I be honest with you, man? It genuinely pisses me off. Like when people, and I remember people getting like angry and negative towards the modern day stuff and the storyline. I saw a big group of people at that time were like, oh, I just want to play as an assassin, keep me here, da 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 da. And I feel like Ubisoft listened too much to that crowd, because I think you had a video like this. I've watched so many Assassin's Creed lore videos where they talk about the, you know, why Desmond was brought into the Animus machine, right? And they had this compelling modern day story, and I felt like they were going down this really cool path. It felt all Illuminati and mysterious. I freaking loved it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this is more of the same in Shadows, but they've like all but dropped that modern day storyline. Like, did they pick up any of the elements that you saw in Valhalla? When, like, do you remember how that game ended in the modern day? Has that been continued at all in any way with Shadows?
No.
Oh, no! No!
Yeah, man.
Not even a little bit.
So when I visited the studio, they gave us a little rundown of how they're approaching the Animus. They see this as another reset. They see this as a new start. So it's almost like, I don't know why this analogy comes to mind, but you're writing a script for a show and it's been rewritten and rewritten, and it's like in rewrite hell. Like, I don't think it's ever coming out. It's crazy to me.
I actually am so sad. That's made me so sad right now.
I'm sorry to ruin your day.
But it was, do you remember, right? And this is being nostalgic, but I don't care. Like, playing Assassin's Creed, Assassin's Creed 2, seeing the writing of the blood on the wall, like all of that stuff, like, and I love watching the lore videos, especially in Assassin's Creed 2, with how, like, do you remember they had the puzzles and they had the real life
conspiracy
and the conspiracy and who was a Templar and how that all fit in? That's the shit that I really loved about us. That's the stuff that kept bringing me back and watching the YouTube videos. I remember at the end of Assassin's Creed 2 where you saw the blood, the writing of blood on the wall. I was like blown away. I sat in my chair for like 30 minutes. I'm like, what? And I was messaging my friend who just finished it, and we were like, you know, is this conspiracy theory? Let's get the tinfoil hat on. And they've done away with that stuff. It breaks my heart. And I don't know if you feel the same.
It breaks my heart too. Man, it really does. And that spoke to me too. Like, playing that growing up, I was like, there's more going on to this thing, man. Like, you know, it made me put on, my tinfoil hat. And I was so bought in. And I was like, but wait, the world's ending. And it was like this narrative propulsion that pushed you through his games. And you were like, we got to stop the end. Like, it was so compelling.
Yep.
And that ceased to exist or matter on a level that it did before when they killed him. So it's just, it has never gotten back. I don't think it ever will.
I remember watching this YouTube video, and I can't remember which character, but I think like they dealt with an important character or storyline in a comic book and not in the actual main game. So many people jumping to the next game were like, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Juno. And they just like, dealt with that person in a comic book, and there was no closure in the games. I don't know. I don't want to be too negative because I still want to play Shadows. I want to judge it, you know, on its own merits. But I know, if you're saying that the modern day storyline is pretty much dropped and there's no continuity there, that makes me so bloody sad, man.
There's no continuity. They do start the game with a, like, you're in the Animus sort of cutscene, and there's someone talking to you, and they're like, you know, play is now a kind of. But I am at, again, like hour 50 or so. I've seen one other scene of that, and it took a couple minutes. So it's like, what are we doing?
Dude, I'm playing through, I was playing through Black Flag, right? The amount of times where you got to get out of your chair and the packages were being delivered and this voice was talking to you and you had to like hack into the computer system. Ah, I love that shit, man. This is, look, I'm gonna play it. And again, Ubisoft gave me the code and I want to give my honest thoughts and impressions on it.
Yeah, you should. But
What do you think is next then for Ubisoft? Like, you've talked about Hexie a little bit. I know that they have all these systems, like with the Animus Hub or whatever it might be. What is next for Ubisoft? What is next for Assassin's Creed?
I think it is, it is sort of jumpstarting this Animus Hub thing, which, by the way, I think was a little overstated in the reporting and just how important it is. I get the feel that, sure, all of the games are going to have this hub at the very beginning, but it's not its own app, which I never wanted it to be, but you still have to click into the game to get to that. And then there's going to sort of like surface different experiences through that. So I think there's also a multiplayer game coming soon, which is kind of exciting to me because I played the old school Assassin multiplayer as well.
So did I, bro. To get all the achievements, you had to.
yeah. That's how they get you. But I think what's next for AC and Ubisoft is, I guess leaning into this Animus Hub thing, offering different experiences and trying to get people, I think, playing within their ecosystem more and more. So when I say Fortnite, don't think that I mean literally like Fortnite, but sort of trying to get people more invested in the brand by offering different experiences and saying, no, just continue to play in our worlds. I think that's what they're going for.
I thought when I first saw those reports, and I don't know if you know how Call of Duty does it, but they have the Call of Duty app and everything is through there. Obviously, everything you have to pay separately, but it's that one hub where you can find everything Call of Duty. So it's not that. Is what you're saying.
So the way it's been described to me is that you will launch, you'll have individual game clients, not a launcher.
Yeah.
And then you will be able to, you know how you authorize your account to have access to other things on certain apps? It's going to be like that. So you just have to prove that you own the game, you know, by some means, and then you'll be able to launch it through that. So it's weird. It's not quite like Call of Duty. It's less restrictive than that.
Okay. All right. And then in terms of games, like we know a little bit about Hexie. There's that multiplayer game as well. Do you feel the future is bright for Assassin's Creed? Or is it part of me feels it's going to be, and not necessarily in a bad way or a good way, depends how you take it and whether you've liked their approach, but it's going to be more of the same, really. What do you think?
I think so. It's bright because they've already announced these smaller things, which, as we mentioned before, I think is a good thing. I think it's good to experiment. I think this trend of massive open world games has, I think, overstayed its welcome at this point. It's almost like they've hit another cycle of, you know, the version of Assassin's Creed they're making.
Yeah.
And so it's bright because they're experimenting a little bit more. But also, if you know, we have to look at it in the grander context of how Ubisoft is doing. If this continues to sell, they're going to keep making it, like, full stop. Ubisoft is a well-oiled machine, and they make games the way they make games, and they're not going to change, especially if it continues to sell. So,
yeah.
Future's a mixed bag, man.
Yeah, I get that. I I'm still keen to play Shadows, and I want to give it a proper go. I just hope, and maybe they're thinking about this, they have so many staff members. Apparently, the Shadows credits take like 2 hours to roll, right? They have so many teams. Give one a team of like 100 to 200 people, or 150, whatever it might be. Let them make an Assassin's Creed game of old. It's more AA in scope. It's not big. It's not as small as Mirage, but kind of like is its own actual fully-fledged standalone game. It didn't start as a DLC. That's what I want to see. And it sounds like Hexy could be that. Is that right? Maybe?
Maybe. I'm not sure how big the team is, but I can only cross my fingers.
All right. Well, let's see how we go. I'm pretty keen to jump into Shadows, as I mentioned. But we've got like 10 minutes or so left on the podcast, bro. I just want to get your thoughts on the rest of this year and 2025. Are there any other games that you're looking forward to that you really want to play? Tell me, man. How about it?
Honestly, GTA 6 is just top of mind. And maybe it's because I'm working on a script that's sort of adjacent to that. But GTA 6 is just... It's sort of that weird moment where everything comes together. Like everyone is, we want this. Like this is so huge. It's monument. It's like going to be the biggest thing in entertainment. Full stop. Yeah. It's all consuming for me right now. Are you excited for it?
I'm pretty stoked for it. Like it feels like we've been wanting this and asking this for so long, and because of how popular GTA 5 was with the online system and shark cards and everything, it was getting pushed back. But the thing that I had at the back of my mind is that they're making so much bloody money. The only thing that I hope for, and I think Rockstar is doing this, is that they're making actually the biggest freaking most awesome game in the world. So I'm keen for it. I just want them to announce a bloody release date so I can sort out my life. I feel like half of the industry is waiting. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Not that we usually have release dates in the fall, but it's like even more sparse than it would have been, it feels like. Yeah, people are sort of like giving the fall a wide berth. Like, do not release in the same month as,
it's as not that even, game. Oftentimes, it's like, oh, don't release on the same day, and then maybe don't release on the same week. Everyone is staying the hell away from GTA 5. The one developer or publisher that bucked that trend a little bit was Gearbox with Borderlands 4. They're just like, we're going September and we're going to stick to our guns. And I was like, you know what? Kudos, good on them. Then part of me also thinks, hold on, same parent company. They know. They know when it's coming out. And it's probably Take October two. Or November or something.
That's right. Probably. And like, also, I feel like other Borderlands games came out in that sort of like fall sort of slot. So that's like a good precursor to the fall gaming season. That's going to be an interesting game. I'm not like a huge Borderlands fan, but I'm interested to see how they're like evolving that forward.
I'm a huge Borderlands fan. Not like there are people that like myself that will play a Borderlands game, finish the main story, do the DLC, and will love it and they'll move on with their life. And I did that with Wonderlands, for instance. I thought Wonderlands was one of the most fun, enjoyable experiences that I've ever had in games. It was actually genuinely a blast. But I didn't really go into the end game much like other people do with like Borderlands 3 and like really trying to grind for the good weapons and everything. Like, to be honest, like my knowledge in that regard is completely non-existent. And I know that a lot of people that are in that space, they're like, Borderlands 3 was just, nothing's hit as hard as Borderlands 2. Borderlands 2 was just kind of the cream of the crop. So it's a weird one where they're trying to Borderlands 4 is a game that they're trying to make for both of those crowds. And I imagine how hard that can be. The one thing that I will say is that the Vault Hunters, I don't know how I feel about them. They feel like just normal NPCs. They don't have character or flair like previous games. And I know like we're talking a lot about nostalgia, and it's very hard to take off the rose-tinted glasses there. But I feel like the character designs just aren't hitting home for me. Maybe I'll change my mind on that once I actually see gameplay. But yeah, I don't know. What do you reckon?
I think you're bang on with that, honestly. And it's sort of hard. I think they're doing a showcase next month, I want to say, in April, where they're going to dive deeper. So maybe that'll reveal some more about those Vault Hunters. But like Borderlands, as a huge fan, you know, there's so much like style. There's so much yeah. personality to that franchise. And there always has been back to the first game. So, mm-hmm. And I know, yeah, people had their criticisms of the characters, especially the villains in 3. But it's yep. like, how do you follow up Handsome Jack? It's just...
You can't, how do you do it? Man. You can't. Yeah. Like any of the villains following up Handsome Jack were going to have a hard time. Just like what we talked about with Assassin's Creed and Ezio. Once yeah. they hit that peak with those set of characters. But like on the other hand, though, I felt like they did a pretty good job with the Borderlands 2 Vault Hunters after the first set. So like I know they have it in them. They could do it, and it's easier said than done. But I just don't know if like these Vault Hunters aren't screaming personality to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I want to see more. And writing is so important, which is weird to say for a first person shooter, like looter shooter like that. But it is. Like it's kind of like any assassin in the Assassin's Creed series. If I don't care about that character, I'm not going to enjoy playing as much. So I think same goes for Borderlands.
Hell yeah. Are there any other games? You've got GTA 6, you've got Borderlands 4. Is there anything that's catching your eye or maybe that you're playing right now that you can talk about?
You know, I'm actually going to go back a little bit and say Kingdom Come Deliverance 2.
All right. What'd you think?
Yeah, that game is incredible. Like, really blows me away. I'm actually not even that far in. I'm like 25, 30 hours in. In the grand scheme of things, but... that was such a refreshing game for me, sort of that almost like an old school Bethesda approach, I would say.
Yeah.
To the approach to an open world game and sort of not holding your hand. And I'm loving it.
Do you need to play the first one to be able to get into the second one? And I only ask because I did try and play Kingdom Come Deliverance 1, and people might roast me for this, but I struggled with how like it was a little dated in terms of the controls and the mechanics, and I struggled to get into it. Do I need to play that or finish that to be able to play 2 or not?
Well, people can roast both of us because I felt the same thing. I did not finish 1, and I could not get that combat. Did not understand it. Full stop. I probably got 12 hours into the first game. So to answer your question, I don't think you need to. I still greatly enjoy it. There's sort of that Mass Effect 2, we're going to reset the main character style thing. So there's like a narrative reason for Henry to be like, you know, have no knowledge of anything again.
What, he hit his head or something? That's my guess.
No, you got it. You got it. He bumped his head. Pretty much.
Oh, that's so funny, bro. I had no idea.
He really does.
It's very funny because as much as I love, and we just talked about this with the Ezio trilogy with AC, but as much as I love games that, you know, they're sequels and they're building up on each other and they're creating a grand story, it does make it hard if you're not already in that franchise. Like I experienced this with our Dragon Age a little bit. It's hard to come in late. And I feel like developers have a tough time with like, well, who are we catering towards and how do we onboard people? Because we always want new people to play our games, but that's hard when it's a direct sequel. That's hard when it's the third game in a trilogy, for instance. And like the soft rebooting of a story or the character hitting his head or whatever it might be is obviously there are ways to go about it. But I know how tough that can be. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it probably speaks to Ubisoft's unwillingness to give us sequels. They probably saw that.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I'm sure they saw that with sales in a weird way with Ezio. No, not in a weird way. In an obvious, like, I remember seeing articles back from like 2011 when Revelations came out, like, you know, Ubisoft not happy with sales, but they were releasing a new one every year. So I think it is difficult, but also when you release a game that reaches a certain level of acclaim and like word of mouth, people are going to see that and say, oh, KCD2, I'm now interested in that franchise. So at the end of the day, it's like, if your game's good, you're good, I think. Yeah. But
this is why I like the Bethesda Game Studios approach, where like you look at Fallout 3 to Fallout 4, you know, Oblivion Morrowind to Skyrim. Like, yes, they're in the same universe, and you very much, you will have a very enjoyable experience playing a later game because it constantly references the previous games with the lore and da-da-da-da, everything like that. But they're very much new area, new story. Even if you haven't touched previous games, or maybe one or two you've dabbled, you can still play Skyrim, and many people did play Skyrim without playing Morrowind and Oblivion and have a great time. And if you really want to go into the lore, you either go back and play those games or you watch a YouTube video. Like, I actually really do like that approach, but I understand with many games, and I think Dishonored 2 probably had this issue in Bethesda's camp, when you have a direct sequel of a game that maybe wasn't so crazily popular, in all likelihood, it's going to sell a little bit less. It's not going to sell more than the previous game if it's a direct sequel, story-wise, narrative-wise, same character kind of thing. I know there's always exceptions to that rule. But yeah, like I do like how Bethesda Game Studios approaches that with Fallout and Elder Scrolls.
Yes, very, very new player friendly. And like you said, it's a special kind of game like Skyrim that can, bring so many new people in that it is functionally the first Bethesda game for a lot of people.
So
it's hard to do, and when they're able to do it, it's special.
Hell yeah, man. Well, dude, we are at that point. Thank you so much. I didn't realize I was gonna get so like amped up and passionate talking about Assassin's Creed. You brought it out of me, man. So thank you so much for joining. Genuinely, I really do appreciate it. Please let everyone know where they can find you, what you do, and I'll include all your links in the description below.
Thanks for having me, Lone. First off, this has been awesome. It's been really cool to watch your show, and I've been really enjoying it so far. You can find me on YouTube, JV, JAYVEE, Twitter as well, if you still use that, JV on YT on Twitter. But besides that, that's where I'm making my content.
Hell yeah, man. I'm looking forward to seeing how your channel develops and all the new green screen content that you're making. If you are watching until this point, thank you so much. Please like, subscribe if you're new. And until next time, this has been the Lone Vault Wanderer. Please take care of yourselves, and would you kindly keep fighting the good fight.